This is the Tripartisan Podcast with Ben Swain, James Henderson, and David Staley. Get ready for the latest football and basketball news and opinions on Duke, NC State, and Carolina with our insiders. Now, here's the Tripartisan Podcast.
Kind of a big week here at the Tripartisans. I am Ben Swain. I'm here with James Henderson and Dave Staley. As always, UNC Syracuse and Duke Virginia highlight the weekend's action. Is there anything else going on? Any other games going on, guys?
Pretty big one.
I don't know.
That's a heck of a basketball weekend. Are we still talking football?
We just had late night with Roy. Countdown to Craziness is coming up on Friday night. I just don't follow Atlantic Division football that closely. Is there Wake play this weekend? Boston College.
You know, it's down, man. It's down. That Louisville Florida State game is looming. We can forget about that one this year.
The best comment that I read anywhere about the Louisville Florida State, they played 2 weekends ago.
Yeah,
is that right?
Right.
Is somebody joked when they were announcing the ACC game times and TV that Florida State Louisville was going to be televised on those TV monitors at the gas stations at the pumps. That's the best thing I saw. All right. But no, we do have a legitimate ACC barn burner, two undefeated teams. The Atlantic semifinal, if you will. State's going down to Clemson. James, how are we feeling about the pack headed down there?
Well, it's tough. You can't feel too good about a team when they're 17-point underdogs. But, I mean, I think given how they've played Clemson the last 2 years and I think the way they've played to start the season, I think State's going to probably go down there with some quiet confidence. And I think it's definitely the Atlantic Division title game. I mean, I really believe you can go ahead and say that. I think outside of Boston College, every other team in the conference in the division has two losses. BC's already lost to State, so State's basically got a two-game lead on them. They haven't played Clemson yet. I think for both of these teams, Clemson and NC State, I mean, the winner is going to have a two-game lead on that on the other team. So it's a big, big game. I think for NC State, it's probably their biggest game since, I'd say, 2010 when they went down and played Maryland in the season finale. And if they would have won that game, they would have won the Atlantic Division. So obviously it's a huge, huge game and certainly the biggest road game in Dave Doran's tenure at NC State.
You mentioned that Maryland game. Do you think State's in a better position being, you know, the big underdog as opposed to being the team that's supposed to go in there and take care of business and just, you know, win a game that they should win and then they win the division? Do you think it's better for them that they're such – you mentioned 17 points. Do you think it's better for them that they're that big of an underdog?
You know, it's a tough question. I mean, that's a good question because I really don't know the answer to that. I think it probably helps you play maybe looser. Obviously, you know, I remember when they went down and when they went up and played at Maryland, I actually went to that game and you're right. I think they were the favorite in that game. And I'm not sure they played tight because they actually came out and I think they took a 14-0 lead on Maryland. That was a Torrey Smith game for NC State fans listening where I think he had 4 touchdowns for them for Maryland that night. But I don't know if maybe State did get tight kind of as the game drew towards the end. Whereas in this situation, I think you're kind of, you're almost playing with house money, even though it's an important game because, you know, I had Lawton Swan on. He covers Clemson on one of our podcasts this week, and he actually had the same worries for Clemson. He felt like with them being the heavy favorite and them being at home, if that game's tight in the third, fourth quarter, he feels like the pressure is going to really be on the Tigers to kind of come through and make plays more so than NC State. So I think State's probably in a better position right now to be the underdog just because your hope is you go down there and you can maybe catch Clemson sleeping a little bit. I think the problem, though, is kind of what we joked about at the beginning. The Atlantic Division is so down now that this is really, I think, Clemson's toughest game left on their schedule. You know, I mean, NC State's ranked 16th in the country right now. They don't have another ranked team left on the schedule. South Carolina's their season finale game, and they're struggling this year. So I would imagine they've been stressing all week and in their bye week that this is probably the game on their schedule that they really have to get from here on out to kind of reach where they want to get to.
I'll tell Dave, you, I'm not much of a gambling man, but every now and then I will see a line that just makes me think, I'm going to put some money on that. And almost every time I do, it comes out the complete opposite of what I thought was going to happen.
Right. But
man, like 17 and a half points for State, like I just can't imagine the game being that big of a blowout. So maybe I should put some money down so that it turns into that big of a blowout.
Well, I mean, I thought the same thing when I saw the line, but you know, I'd imagine they're thinking this is going to be a 34-17 type game, 35-17, and it could end up that way. But I don't know. I think Clemson this year has received a lot of respect from the bettors. I mean, I don't know if you guys follow lines at all, but they're 2-4 against the spread right now. They're 0-3 at home against the spread. You know, Syracuse, they were 25-point favorites against Syracuse. I think they won that game by 5 at home the last time they were home. Obviously, Lawrence got injured in that game, but even when he played, he just didn't look comfortable. And I think NC State's played really well this year. They really haven't had a tough game. I mean, I know the Boston College score looked close, but anybody that watched that game, I mean, that game wasn't even close, you know, just in terms of personnel. I mean, State had 4 turnovers, had a blocked field goal, had a blocked punt return for a touchdown, and still were able to win that game. And so, I mean, I think if they play up to what they're capable of playing, I do think that line's definitely off.
Dave, I was just about to ask you a question about the pulse in Chapel Hill about this NC State game and really, again, going back to calling it that Atlantic semifinal, where State's really the one local school that hasn't broken through to that championship game yet. And it's kind of a token that State or that UNC and Duke fans get to hold over their Wolfpack friends. I'll rephrase it to match what you said. Do you think a lot of UNC fans will be looking to bet on NC State to cover as like that emotional hedge where if State goes in there and wins, they can at least boast that they want some money out of it. And if they lose, it's worth it because, hey, I threw, you know, $30 at the game and State got blown out. Is there a lot of interest among UNC fans in this game from a please God don't let them win sort of point of view?
I think there's probably actually 2 points of view. I mean, or maybe 3 points of view. I may get into this and have like 7, but I think the first is just, hey, we need to focus on ourselves and stop giving State any sort of attention, right? But I think that's more just saying something to try to make it appear like you don't care than truly not caring. And then for the people that actually are talking about it, I think there's 2 points of view. And one is basically, please don't let them win. We can't afford to get any further behind in, you know, in-state recruiting and whatever you want to, just as a program, we can't afford to get any further behind. The flip side is, hey, maybe if State, I mean, you could make an argument, right, that State beats Clemson. I mean, they're probably going undefeated in the regular season, right? And then you go into the ACC championship game. At this point, it looks like you're probably going to be playing Virginia Tech. I mean, I guess Miami still has a chance. I guess theoretically Virginia still has it. I guess there's still plenty of teams that still have a chance, but right now the Hokies are in the driver's seat. And so you have to think they would have a decent chance at winning that, right? And so you think, okay, well, what if State goes in, wins the ACC championship game? Does that in some way spark the administration? I mean, you hear all these people talking about Carolina's administration doesn't care about football. And I'm not sure that I really buy that. I mean, I think anybody would agree that basketball is first here. But it's not like we're actively trying to lose in football most of the time, it seems like. So I think those are the points of view that people have is either really don't want them to win, or hey, if they do, maybe at least something good will come out of it, and the administration will try to really make football a priority here.
That's an interesting take that I had not considered. The if NC State wins, goes undefeated, you know, at least is either in the playoff or in the we got robbed that we're not in the playoff conversation. Maybe that triggers UNC to look at football a little bit differently. That's an interesting thing that I had not considered. James, what do you think about that?
I actually think UNC cares about football. I mean, they hired Butch Davis, who at the time was considered a great hire. I mean, he was a guy who, I mean, you make that move. If you view yourself as taking a chance to try and have a big time football program. You know, they made that early decision back then to get rid of John Bunning, which led to them, I think, jumping in early on Butch. I just think that for UNC, if I was them, I would look at it more from the standpoint of what's best for us. And clearly, you know, I think there's questions with Fedora right now. But to be honest with you, there were questions with Dave in 2016 at NC State. I remember going into that last game against North Carolina and people were talking, is this going to be his last game? Because State wasn't favored. I think they were actually double-digit underdogs going to Chapel Hill that year in the finale. And I think if they would not have won that game, they would have missed the bowl game. And case could be made. He would have been fired. But since that point, I mean, that game's kind of – I don't know if it's changed the trajectory of both programs, but it certainly has NC State. You know, he follows that up last year with a 9-win season, 6 conference wins, and then you have them right now top 16 in the country with, like Dave said, I wouldn't go so far as to say I think if State beats Clemson, they're winning out, because I still think there are some tricky games left on the schedule. But you've definitely put yourself in a position to where you've maybe at least reached the level of Florida State, Louisville in the Atlantic Division, and now you're kind of nipping at the heels of Clemson. And that's really – I think all you can ask for at this point, given how strong Clemson's program is. I mean, they're clearly the class of the ACC, and if you're on the same side as them, you gotta at least be competitive with them. And I think State should be there right now.
As for Duke football fans, they're just hoping that the outcome is whatever doesn't get them killed in Death Valley in a few weeks. That's what they're hoping for. Dave, let's talk about some UNC football. I read, and I don't have it in front of me, but I saw the depressing tweet of listing if Fortin isn't able to go on Saturday, here's the list of quarterback options. The first one was Nathan Elliott, obviously. The second one was a position player. The third one was Ratliff Williams, who – he played some last year, didn't he? Or at least he threw a couple of passes last year, right?
I think he threw a couple of passes last okay. year.
But played quarterback. He played quarterback in high school, though.
Yeah.
He was a four-star recruit in high school. He was actually a four-star quarterback commitment.
So that might be the best option. So
Jace Reuter wasn't on that list?
No, he was.
Oh, okay. I didn't hear that one.
I think he was. I think he was the second option. You're right. And he's the walk on. Is that right? Or has he got a scholarship?
James, no.
He's on scholarship. He was a four star guy too, I believe.
Yeah. He's just young. But I mean, he's. I don't know. I guess we'll. What's your question? What's going to happen?
My question is, are all of those guys going to transfer when Kelly Bryant's at UNC next year?
Well, Ratliff Williams won't, because he can stay where he is now. I don't know what, like, I mean, you have to think someone's going to leave, right? If Kelly Bryant does come. And I think if Kelly Bryant comes, I don't think anyone cares that someone transfers out. So I guess, I don't know. I mean, do you guys think I'm a Carolina fan, right? So I'm sitting here thinking like, man, this could be amazing. And you read all these articles pumping it up. Like, you know, Bryant was, I don't remember what the wording was that I saw, like amazed or something by his time in Chapel Hill or something. But do you guys really think there's a chance that he winds up coming here?
I do. I mean, I think it's a good fit for him. Now, I'm going to be honest with you. I'm not a huge Kelly Bryant fan, just in terms of him as a player. I think Clemson clearly made the right decision for their program. But I think he's a really good fit in UNC's system, because it seems like they want a mobile quarterback. I'm not sure he's a really, really good passer, but I don't necessarily think you have to be in their system. I mean, I think you can be really successful as a dual threat guy who can run and then throw just enough. We saw Marquise Williams do that. Marquise Williams had a couple really good years at UNC, and obviously that didn't translate over for him to the next level, I think, because of his arm. But again, at North Carolina, you can win games with a guy like Kelly Bryant. And if I'm him, I'm looking for a place where I can go and play. He definitely will go there and play. And then he's staying in the ACC, which that may be a perk for him. He's from South Carolina originally, so he's close to home. I do think Clemson's on the schedule, I believe, for UNC next year, which if he's into the whole revenge narrative, he'd get a chance to match up with Clemson. I think it makes a lot of sense. And I think for Carolina, it would be a really good pickup, at least as a one-year stopgap in hopes of getting, I guess, if they think Fortune or Reuter or whoever else they recruit is good enough. I think of those guys, I would imagine Surratt's played his last game, if I had to give you my opinion. I think he's probably going to transfer out. That's just what I would think based on him being passed in the depth chart, him being injured, and just, you know, the expectations that were all there.
I think I would probably agree with that. And I think Bryant shows up, he's definitely playing next year. Here's my question on that. You'll know the answer to this, and I think I know the answer. But so he's eligible to play next year because he's transferring before the start of the spring semester, so he gets in a full semester of classes. Is that why he's eligible next fall?
Yeah, well, he'd be eligible because he's a I think he's set to graduate in December.
Oh, okay.
So he'd be the whole post grad, and that's the reason he can go to North Carolina without there being a penalty. I think T.J. Logan did that a couple years ago at UNC. I think he transferred to Virginia as a post grad, and that's kind of the same thing with Kelly. You know, he'd be able to leave in December and just play right away. So,
gotcha.
But the Russell Wilson rule would be that Clemson still gets to claim him if he ever plays in the NFL.
There you go. He's got a degree,
My concern, Dave, would be this. And your question was, is there a shot that he goes to UNC? I think absolutely there's a shot that he goes to UNC. If I'm a Tar Heel fan, I'm somewhat concerned that he might come to UNC. Two reasons. One, I'm with James that I don't rate him very highly as a quarterback. But two, what happens to those young guys that we joked about that are already in the system, are already slated to be kind of the next quarterback? Are they going to want to wait another year of being an understudy, or are they going to go somewhere else or do what, you know, Kelly Bryant did to Clemson, which was I'm going to play my four games and see how things go, and then I'm out and go somewhere else. Bryant isn't going to go anywhere that he's not going to be the number one guy. He can't risk that. After leaving the Clemson situation, or he would still be at Clemson right now if he wanted to deal with that. So it almost reminds me a little bit of, we joked about Russell Wilson, but Russell and I'm drawing a blank on his name now, James.
Mike Glennon?
Yeah, Mike Glennon.
Mm-hmm.
Where you can have Russell Wilson for another year and lose your quarterback of the future, or you get Kelly Bryant for 1 year and lose your quarterback of the future. Is it worth it in that case to bring in a guy like that when you've already got a guy in your system that you've recruited and might be able to step in and be that guy the next year? I think the one thing that UNC needs more than anything is some consistency at their quarterback position, and bringing in a 1 year hired gun, I'm not sure gives them that stability that they need from 1 year to the next. So I would almost turn it around on that and say, I'd be more concerned if he does come than be concerned, do we have a chance at getting him?
I'm not sure that Cade Fortin is going to be Mike Glennon next year. So no. I have no idea. I have to think that either he or Reuter would be willing to wait 1 year while Bryant is here and play behind him. And, you know, then if it doesn't work out for him, then leave. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I could be wrong. They could both bounce. But I just think that at some level, they're both still young. It's, you know, it's not like they're juniors, right? So, I mean, they've still got a chance to contribute. And maybe you know, because almost this year you've been afraid for them to see the field because it's you run the risk of a Surratt situation where, you know, you throw them to the Wolves too early, their confidence gets shot. And I honestly think that that's one of the problems with Surratt, right, is that maybe if he hadn't had to play last season the way he did, he might have been more ready. Maybe not, but I mean, you would hope that, or you would think that that might have been a contributing factor to him kind of not being as successful as everybody thought he was going to be.
Hey, let me ask you this, David. With the Kelly Bryant recruitment, do you think there's any chance that plays a role in what happens with Fedora? From the standpoint of, say, 2 weeks from now, and I know he's mentioned Kelly has mentioned wanting to make an early decision, a quick decision. I know he'd be a December guy, but say he makes a decision in a couple weeks and he wants to pick UNC. Does that give any sort of a lifeline to Fedora, regardless of how the season plays out, because he could pitch, I have a quarterback for next year, I have a guy who we've lacked this year. I mean, do you think there's any chance that type of a decision would carry that much weight at UNC?
Oh boy, that's a good question. I had not necessarily considered that, and I don't know. I think to some degree it could. Mm-hmm. Especially when you start thinking, all right, well, yeah, let's say, okay, so we thinking as the administration, okay, we do retain him, and then Bryant's here, and I don't know, Carolina goes 8-4 next year, whatever. Then you justify keeping him another year, and then if things go south the next year without him again, without Bryant, then you could maybe at that point say, okay, well, we gave you a shot. We gave you an extra, you know, 2 years, one with Bryant to get the future quarterback ready, and now you've had your future quarterback year. And if things don't pan out then, at least the buyout is a lot lower.
Right, so, exactly.
I guess that would play into a decision. I had not really given that any consideration until you just asked, but that's a really solid point. And maybe one that makes Carolina fans question whether they want to get on Ben's team and maybe.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that's kind of what I was getting at, is maybe that opens some eyes into, hey, do we really want this to happen if that could potentially, you know, happen? Because I think it would be something that would definitely bring a lot of positive pub, because even though there's some that question Bryant as a, you know, as a pure quarterback, I mean, he's won games and he's a proven guy. And I think UNC, I watched that Virginia Tech game. I mean, they've got some good pieces, man. They just don't have a quarterback. And you see how important that is. But, I mean, at receiver, they've got some good receivers. Michael Carter's really good at running back. I mean, I think if they could get some sort of stabilizing force there at quarterback, they'd be able to compete for sure.
Yeah, and that's where my comments came from. I just think stability is more than a one-year thing. And where Fedora's been his most successful was that second year of Marquise at quarterback. You know, they had what did Mitch go, second overall? Second or third? So they had the second overall pick in the NFL draft and won 8 games that year, right? Was it 8-5?
It was 7 or 8. I think it was 8. Yeah.
Okay. So even when Fedora's had an incredible quarterback in his system for 1 year, it still doesn't click to the point where it did that year with Marquise in the second year as that starter. And I just think back to his leadership and the way that he handled that team and his personality just really, you know, embedded itself in every member of that football team. That's what carried them to the ACC championship game. Almost into the playoff conversation if they win that first game against South Carolina. I really wonder about these 1 year fixes at quarterback, but you know, James nailed it. When you look at UNC, it's obvious they just need a quarterback. I'm just not sure a 1 year guy is the best route. And I would be concerned about what happens to those guys who could eventually fit into that. I'm going to play here and be the starter for, you know, for 2 or 3 seasons, which is what you've seen at Duke and Wake And those two programs have been successful with that. You know, it's been definitely growing pains for both programs as they've brought those quarterbacks in. But, you know, you can't help but think that Wake's only going to get better with their freshman quarterback over the years. See what Daniel Jones is doing at Duke right now. I would be more inclined to roll with those younger guys, but like you guys were just talking about, maybe that's not an option for Larry Fedora. Maybe he's not going to have the patience granted to him to see that through. So it's actually an interesting thing to look at. You think of UNT as not being a real compelling football story this year, but that is a lot of moving parts that are pretty interesting. Let's jump over to Durham for a little bit. Speaking of not very interesting, Duke Georgia Tech game was kind of boring outside of the 90 some seconds where Duke scored three touchdowns to put the game out of reach. There is nothing David Cutcliffe enjoys more than beating Paul Johnson. And I don't know the story behind it. I don't know where it started, but those two kind of consistently snipe at each other in these little thinly veiled jabs in the media. Duke recruits Atlanta heavily, and so I know recruiting is probably the root of most every college football coach beef ever, but Cut is one to make a lot of comments about the triple option in Georgia Tech's offense and how quarterbacks are used and how receivers are used. And Paul Johnson's definitely not one to mince words about anybody that he holds grudges against. Just ask Brian Van Gorder about that. Do you guys have at State in Carolina, is there just a coach that your coach loves beating more than anything else in the world?
You want that first, David?
Sure. I think right now, any coach on the opposing sideline that's standing there when we get a victory is probably the one that he wants to beat the most. But if you had to pick an actual person, I think until this year, the de facto answer was Pat Narduzzi. Just because, for whatever reason, Carolina beats Pitt every year, right? And so, that you know, I kind of look at it as just like, you know, Roy, and Roy's is less about a coach and more about a team, but like, Roy beats State all the time because Roy wants to beat State. And I don't know what it is about Pitt that makes – maybe Fedora doesn't get up for them at all, but just seems like there's something about them that he's like, all right, well, we're gonna play this game. And so I think then beyond that, you then now this year had the little comments that Narduzzi made about Carolina stealing signs. And so I think that probably – to some degree has played into, I think now Fedora probably does have some stronger desire to beat him on an annual basis than maybe he did before that. That's about the only one I can think of really off the top of my head.
Did Narduzzi come in the year that UNC won the Coastal? Was that his first year?
Who was Pitt's coach before that?
The guy who went out west.
No, I thought it was Wisconsin, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah. That's exactly who it was.
Forget his name.
Yeah, it's Pitt. We don't care.
Yeah.
But yeah, he went to Wisconsin.
The reason
I asked that question, Dave, is I'm pretty sure, and I don't know if this is the root of it, but I'm pretty sure that year that UNC was running things in the Coastal, it was Narduzzi's first year or potentially his second year, but I believe it was his first year.
It was 2015. That was his first year.
Okay. And I think he got really chesty going into that, that UNC Pitt game, talking about Pitt being the team to beat in the Coastal. And, I believe it was like a primetime game.
He was right. We beat them every time we play them. They are the team to beat.
Yeah. So, but I think Narduzzi actually made some comments before that game. Because I remember watching that game and I just, you know, remember little bits and pieces of it that I think it was at Pitt and I think it might have been a Thursday night game or at least it was a primetime game. And it was one of those whoever wins the game is going to have the upper hand in the Coastal for the rest of the season. and UNC took it to them pretty good. And since then, it's just been, you know, a bloodbath whenever Pitt plays UNC. So that's a good solid answer, and I think it traces back to that. But we can double check that. James, what about Doran? I know he hates technology, but what about coaches?
Yeah, you know, I would say Clemson, but he hasn't beat him yet. I know he really wants that one, just because that's really the team left that they haven't been able to take down. You know, they went into last year with Louisville, Florida State, and Clemson. He had never beat any of them, and he beat Louisville and FSU. So I'd say Clemson, but again, he hasn't won. So if I had to pick one that he has had some success against, I actually think Steve Adazio. And I don't really think there's a lot of like bad blood or anything there, but I just think both of those coaches try to stress the same things within their programs, and you know, toughness, physicality, run the football. You know, they're both kind of guys who I think they display a lot of intensity when you watch them on the sidelines at times. But I mean, I just think that would be the guy who I feel like Doran really likes matching up against, just because I think both programs try to have a lot of similarities in terms of how they build their teams around their offensive and defensive lines and different things like that. But I don't think there's like any animosity or anything like that between those two coaches that I know of. I just think it just seems like when Doran talks about BC, you can kind of sense he really gets up to play them because he knows it's going to be a physical game. And I think he likes those types of games.
Yeah, I was hoping, and maybe it's funny to just see the cyclical nature of things. A couple of years ago, when Doran and Cutcliffe took the picture in the store with the six packs, right. I was hoping it was going to be a little like inner triangle rivalry, but it doesn't seem like Cutcliffe and Fedora obviously play every year, and Fedora and Doran obviously play every year, but it just doesn't seem like a lot of, you know, animosity or even recognition between the three of them. And you know, Duke and State never get to play each other anymore, but I don't know. I just like to see a little bit more out of the local rivalries than what we see now.
Tom O'Brien to really bring out the hatred.
And God, he was the best. Oh my God. I miss T.O.B. He was so good. Especially the year that Everett Withers had nothing to lose, and so he could say whatever he wanted to say. That was a fun year here in the triangle. And even, you know, T.O.B. and Cutcliffe had a little back and forth in the media the 2 years that they got to play each other. Actually, it was just 1 year where it was O'Brien, and I think the next year was Doran's first year. But you know, they had a few comments in the media, and I miss that. I really wish the coaches would kind of get at it a little bit more. But just, you know, we don't have the horses to have three good teams in the triangle at the same time, it doesn't seem.
No, and blame the triangle. What is it? A Pigskin preview they do every year where they go over there and Durham at the beginning of the season and laugh it up with each other. Maybe that's got something to do with it.
You think it's just United? You don't see Auburn and Alabama doing that every year?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so.
But maybe you're right. Like the coaches all have to get together and kind of drum up collective support for college football so that it gets us interested in the season. Like, we don't have enough for one coach to carry his own tour, you know, where he's the one that's like garnering all the headlines. Maybe there is something to that.
Hey, we talked about this one time before, but I wanted to get you guys' opinion on this. You know, I was talking with a buddy of mine about the crowd at Penn State. I think we talked about that. But could you imagine what it would be like to have one university, you know, in the triangle? I mean, do you think you could get that type of support for one if you had only one program?
Like a super team?
Yeah, I mean, just in terms of obviously Happy Valley's, I mean, or Penn State's able to support a whatever 90,000, 100,000 seat stadium. But if you only had one university here, and I don't care which of the three it was, if it was just one versus literally three ACC programs 45 minutes apart, do you think they'd be able to have a program like that?
And all the same number of people and alums? Yeah, I think that'd be kind of cool, actually.
I think a lot of it just has to do with the nature of our area. And maybe it's a, maybe that is a product of having so many good universities in the area, but like there's so many transplants here. And so like, if you think about the Carolina Hurricanes, for example, which is, you know, it's a pro franchise and not a, a college franchise, obviously, but it's a team in the triangle that in theory, all North Carolina or all North Carolinian or North Carolinians, excuse me, should be cheering for, but you go watch them play Pittsburgh or the Rangers or Philly or any Northeastern team. And it's like 50% transplants in the stadium. I wonder if that would dampen any of the excitement, you know, where like you've got people who would come out and watch the games, but they're all wearing like Ohio State shirts. Or, right, you know, it's like, I can't, you know, I'm down here in North Carolina because this is where my job is, and I'm a huge Michigan fan. But yeah, I'm going to go check out this Triangle area super school and watch them play. It'd be cool if it did. I just, that would be the one thing that I would worry about in terms of would it get the same level of support as a Penn State, where everyone up there is Penn State. It's, you know, not, nobody moves to you know, Pennsylvania.
Right.
Everybody moves from Pennsylvania.
Right.
so maybe that's me being super arrogant about our area being awesome.
Better than every other area.
Yes. But I think that's a recognized truth, right?
Oh, oh yeah. Nationally, yes.
I mean, literally every magazine that ever puts out a top places to live list, the Triangle area is on there, usually listed as Raleigh Durham, which is another topic of conversation for another time. Well, James, good luck to the Wolfpack this weekend. Dave Tar Heels are going up to Syracuse in the first basketball game of the season. I think, are you guys playing basketball?
That's the halftime entertainment. That's how they're going to get, you know, the crowd there.
I would watch that in a heartbeat. But maybe we will get a UNC South Carolina game on the schedule now that the state government is getting involved and trying to get the NCAA to approve that. Maybe we'll touch on that next time with some actual basketball to talk about. But for the Tripartisans this week, again, good luck to the Wolfpack. Duke's got Virginia at home. UNC is up in Syracuse. I am Ben Swain. These guys are Dave Staley and James Henderson. Anything else you guys want to close on? Any closing shots, parting shots?
I'm ready for the basketball discussions. Let's do it.
All right, we got one ready for basketball and maybe two ready for basketball, depending on how State does in Clemson this weekend. We will see you guys next week.
You've been listening to the Tripartisan Podcast with Ben Swain, James Henderson, and David Staley. We hope you enjoy this show every week during the ACC football and basketball season. Our three insiders will have another installment next week on all the football and basketball happenings with Duke, NC State, and Carolina. Don't forget you can download and listen to this podcast at WRALSportsFan.com, the WRAL Sports Fan app, or subscribe to it in iTunes and Google Play stores.